Okay, Ilza's voicemail, take 57.
In a world where anything can happen, missed calls have a way of coming back to haunt you. This summer, Ilza Christ has a busy schedule and can't take your call
right now.
Okay, what?
I need the word busy to sound more dangerous.
How did I make it sound before?
Like, you know, busy. Make it sound like she's killing robots with a grenade launcher or something.
Busy.
That's better. Okay, take 58.
In a world where anything can happen, missed calls have a way of coming back to haunt you. This summer, Ilza Christ has a busy schedule and can't take your call right now. One voicemail is all that stands between her and total destruction. So leave
no.
a message. What now?
Just no. No.
You're killing me.
Well, I mean, when you say this summer, I have to hear an asteroid on fire, hurtling toward Earth, crawling with bloodthirsty extraterrestrial shapeshifters.
Skrulls or Chitauri?
Chitauri, totally.
Okay, so this summer.
See, that's what I'm talking about. They're practically biting holes in my flesh when you say it like that.
Can I try it with the music?
Yeah, I'll cue it up.
Cool.
Ilza's voicemail, take 59.
In a world where anything can happen, missed calls have a way of coming back to haunt you. This summer, Ilza Christ has a busy schedule and can't take your call right now. One voicemail is all that stands between her and total destruction. So leave a message. She'll be back.
Okay, I am getting chills.
Oh, for real? That's awesome.
No, I want to leave a message.
Then it was totally worth the 6 hours. Today on the show, the strange world of voiceover artists. And now he's a Hasidic lesbian roofing contractor. She's a two-fisted stamp collector who doesn't play by the rules. Together, they're Colin McEnroe.
Yeah, this is a very exciting show for Wolfie because, of course, she does voiceover stuff. And we've got, in honor of the movie, or at least in reaction to the movie In a World, which is out in theaters, playing at a movie theater near you right now. It's a comedy set in the world of voiceover artists. And so this was obviously a show we would want to do. And what we would want to do is pull together a whole bunch of very talented voiceover artists to kind of also help dispel some of the misconceptions you may have about what that career is like and what their reality really is. So they're here in the studio with us right now. Randy Kay is a voice talent, a personality at WSHU, and a voiceover coach with Edge Studio in Fairfield. Marty Moran is a voiceover artist. He's based in Wethersfield. And Casey Rogers, you're going to meet her just in just a second. She's a cartoon voiceover artist for over 20 years, known best for her work on Pokemon, where she's voiced over 75 characters. So, and a little bit later, we'll talk to Luz Ramos, who's an actor and voiceover artist who specializes in dubbing English language films into Spanish. I think I have that correct. Anyway, so that'll come later. As we go along here, we'd love to hear from you. If you have questions, 860-275-7266. 860-275-7266. Randy Kay, I'm going to start with you. I think for a lot of people, you know, they listen to this, they hear these voices, which are omnipresent now. I mean, they're just, you know, every device you own has a voice telling you something. And there's voices on everywhere and certainly on commercials and stuff like that. And I think a lot of people think about that and they think, I could probably do that. I mean, how hard is that? I sit in front of a microphone and read stuff. I can do that. I've got a nice voice. So what don't they know? I'm going to ask all of you that. But what are the things that they don't understand about it?
Well, I think that's like saying, I own this beautiful Stradivarius. I can be a concert violinist because I own that. And you have to learn how to play it. You have to learn how to control it. There's a lot more to it. There's a lot more to being a model than just being pretty. So I think 9 out of 10 people that come to me and say, I want to do this, say, everyone tells me I have a nice voice. And that's like, great, you've got 1% of what you need to function in this business. Now let's work on the other 99%. So that's misconception number one. I have a nice voice, therefore it's easy. I can just do this.
All right, Marty Moran, what are some of the other 99% things?
Well, to Randy's point, you're a writer. It would be like saying, we all know how to write, but there's a certain amount of skill and practice and wisdom that goes into writing the way that you write. So, yes, you do have to have what they call a good voice, which is a marketable voice. But on top of that, you have to have the ability to perform. You know, you're in a studio with a bunch of people that are staring at you and critiquing every single syllable, right?
That but opening then, thing was very much like a session I had in New York.
Yeah, that's exactly what they're like.
Can you say that word a little?
could you make that a little more purple? Because, you know, that's what
you get.
Did
they really say that to make it more purple, make it more?
I once got direction like that to make it more purple, yeah.
Yeah, and I was told, can you do that? Can you dye your hair blonde for a second and do it that way? And then dye your hair, you know, I mean, just like mentally dye your hair blonde, whatever that meant.
Yeah. But, well, I don't know. Would that be a useful kind of instruction? Would you know right away what they meant by that, or was it just a stupid way to communicate?
Unfortunately,
with you?
I did know.
Yeah, some of those really make sense, and some make no sense at all. But you know, besides, once you get sort of the skill down or the ability to do the work, that's maybe 20% mm-hmm. of the equation in order to make a living doing it, because the other 80% is finding clients, being responsive to your clients' needs, taking care of all the business aspects, because it really is kind of like a one-person business where you're wearing all the hats. You have to procure the right equipment if you're going to have a studio at your house or your own studio. You have to have, I don't know, you know, it's all that other stuff that it's hard for artists to relate to. Like, you're like, well, hey, man, you know what? I just want to do the voiceover part, and I'm going to let agents and managers and everybody else take care of the business stuff. And I suppose if you're a celebrity, it works out that way, but for the worker bees, it doesn't. You have to pay attention to all that stuff.
Increasingly, celebrities, they worked hard for where they get, and where they are. They're producing, they're writing their own shows, they're coming up with their own concepts. I tell people it takes five layers. Layer one is a voice. Okay, so we all have a voice, but what kind of voice do you have? What images does it call to mind when you speak? What can you do with that voice? How do you sound? How is it marketable? Is it a Grey Poupon voice, or is it an Albo dog food voice? Like, you have to know that and take care of your voice. Layer two is reading skills. You must be able to read fluidly and fluently and often cold. Layer three is acting skills. Layer four is technique. From tempo to pitch to adding characteristics like an animation artist might do. And layer five is the business. And all of those must come together. So you're running your own voiceover business.
And you really need all of them. Like, you can't be like, well, I really can't read very well, but I'll if somebody just, you know, you can read me a line and I'll spit it back. Yeah. I can do that. I mean,
that works if you're 3 years old. That's how we do it with
the kids. Yeah.
You know, I'm going to circle back to Randy and Marty in just a second, because one thing I haven't really done is kind of establish really what their work tends to be, maybe sort of the pie chart of their work, what kind of work that they do. I want to learn a little bit more about that. But since we've got Casey Rogers sitting here, you're listening to them describe their work, which is, you know, it's going to turn out, I think, that their work's all over the map, all kinds of things, anywhere you can use a voice. You really specifically concentrate on animation, right?
Yes, I do. That's what my voice is good for. I have not been cast as a human being very often. I've been a stick of gum, a chicken, and all of these other characters. If I'm a human being, I'm some sort of little kid, or I'm an old lady, or
what does a stick of gum sound like? Do you remember how that went?
Trident, wait! It was like that. He bungee jumped. And
what gum does.
I mean, the audition was, you go in and you say Trident White three times. And then you leave. And
that was the whole audition?
So basically it was like you're walking under a tree and it's shedding its leaves and you catch one. I don't know why they cast me.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe I just sounded like I was bungee jumping.
I
don't know.
Bungee jumping, like the gum was literally bungee jumping?
Yeah, he was bungee
jumping.
I thought
that might be a term of art or something.
And but I didn't know what the scene was. They just said, you're a little stick of gum, say Trident White three times.
Wow. Yeah.
But that's a really good gig, right?
A great gig. Yeah. Yes, I got a lot. Yes, it was a very good gig.
It paid the rent.
And I just want to say,
I saw a helicopter parked outside.
Yeah.
Was that yours?
That's Casey's.
I got to see if Wolfie can get coffee from my helicopter.
Oh, sure. I'm sure that could be.
And one of the things I was thinking while you guys were talking was that I always think of this job as being a sales job. It's great. My playtime is when I get to work.
Oh, sure.
You know, the stuff that I'm getting actually paid for, and in the studio, the thing I get a check for. But my actual work is sales. Mm-hmm. And I think that I was lucky because my father was in advertising, so it kind of osmosis. But I think that, you guys are totally right. It's it's not just you have a great voice or you can do a funny voice. And I've coached too, so I know a lot of people have the same misconception.
Yeah, and the sales part of it is not only the most important part, but for me, that's the hardest part.
It is hard.
And that is what separates the men from the boys or the girls from the women. There are many folks that really just aren't willing to put that part of it, that energy in. And you really do, because it's doing the work, once you know how to do it, is not necessarily hard. It's the getting the work that's the
Yeah, I call it
challenge.
The Lana Turner syndrome, although increasingly people don't know who that is. So I'm like, I'm calling it the American Idol syndrome. But it takes work to get on American Idol. But Lana Turner, just that thing of I will sit back and be discovered, that myth, no matter how many people come to us at Edge Studio and say, I want to be in voiceover, I'm very hard on the – I say, listen, I'm going to tell you all about the business. But I'm telling you right now, if you don't want to run a small business, have a good time today. We'll record you. You'll get to hear yourself back. Yay. Uh-huh. But don't do this.
Right.
And they – still part of us has this magical thinking that we will make a good demo, put it – you know, it used to be get an agent. Now it's like put it on a pay-to-play site and I'll just sit back and wait for them to contact me. Mm. And so many people are disappointed – that they have to do work to get work, no matter how much you say it from the beginning.
Right.
That's
true.
Yeah.
Mm.
For people younger than those of us sitting in the room, Lana Turner was supposedly discovered sitting on a stool, I think, at a soda fountain.
Schwab's drugstore.
Yeah. All right. So, but that doesn't happen anymore.
And it wasn't true then either.
All right. Okay.
Made for a good story, though.
Yeah. So, I want to hear a little bit more from Randy and Marty. Like, what is your work, Marty? I mean, if we were to make a pie chart of your work, I mean, what kinds of things do you wind up doing as a voiceover artist?
You know, it's all over the place. It's obviously radio and TV commercials that I narrate. I do a lot of non-broadcast work, which will be training corporations doing training for their employees or retailers doing training for their employees. I've been actually at Edge Studio. I just wrapped up an English as a Second Language program for South Korean kids. That was fun because you have to do a lot of characters that they throw at you, and then you have to sing in the character voices too.
So does it get turned into an instructional video, or what does it get turned into?
Yeah, that's what it is. It's almost set up like a video game, and they take it very seriously over there. They start kids learning English very, very young, and it's all the phonics. So that was fun. You know, it's just all different stuff. There are IVR programs, interactive voice response programs, that you do, you know, press one for English, press two for this, all those things.
So you're that guy sometimes?
Sometimes.
Yeah.
Not that often, but sometimes, yeah. So it's really what I like about the business for me is that it really is something different for me every day. So one day I did a commercial this morning. Tomorrow I'm doing some commercials for Dragon Software. I auditioned for another audiobook, so I might be doing another audiobook this fall. It's just that's one thing that I like. I like the variety, and it is something different. Sometimes you get to do some fun character voices for some of the presentations, and you know that's fun too. So
I want to hear from Randy a little bit about hers, but I'm also curious to know, just while I have this thought in my head, like in the movie, in a world, these are LA-based voiceover artists, and they're all going after the same work, and so they all got to know each other, and it's pretty clear, even just sort of doing a little reading and research online, that there's a group of people there who do know each other. Do you know? I don't know. Like, I used to work with Damon Scott. He does a lot of voiceover. Mm-hmm. I mean, do you know who you're up against a lot of times if you're going for work in this market?
Well, yes. If you're auditioning for something in New York City, your agent calls, you get sent down there, you go to it, and you sign in, and you oftentimes see a lot of the same guys there because they're looking for people with sort of a similar sound. So you do, over the years, get to know the guys. And it's actually kind of nice because – you joke about certain aspects of the business and kind of almost in a way keep each other a little bit sane, because there seems like there's no rhyme or reason to the auditioning scene where you audition and then you have to train yourself to forget about it the moment you leave, because you don't hear if you've if you didn't book it, they don't call you and say, hey, thanks for coming down, but we went with someone else. Like, you just don't hear anything.
You don't hear. I always assume I came in second.
Yeah, that's a good way to, but you see, that's,
yes, I came in second.
But that's how you have to look at it.
Sure. And sometimes you don't hear for a really long time, and then you do hear and you've booked it. So it could be any time that you'll hear.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, or, and this drives my wife crazy, if I'm watching TV and a spot comes on that I auditioned for, and I don't mind if the guy is good or
he's awesome.
Or if it sounds like what uh-huh. they said for the direction when you were there, yeah. but when it's totally different, you know, I want to be like Elvis and just blasting away at the TV.
I know, but see, but that's the thing about voiceover, and we are all in this business so excited about In a World, although it's not the first voiceover movie ever, but it is a community, and there's the live in-person community. I, too, go down to New York and audition on occasion, and then there's a growing online community of voiceover talents. I have voiceover friends in every state, in Canada, in other countries. I have a friend in Germany, and we just know each other online, and it's very supportive because the thing is, when you go to New York, if you're all being sent in by your agents, you're all awesome. Like, everybody in that room
that's
is going
true.
To be
yes.
awesome.
Everybody so is qualified true. To do the job.
Right. Uh-huh. So then it just becomes a question of their subjective, mm-hmm. you know, that voice is the mm-hmm. one I thought I heard saying it versus that voice. Mm-hmm. So it's right. not your skill against mine. No. It's your voice. Their choice, their selection. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. if there's 40 people at the audition, which is a low number,
right.
39 mm-hmm. will not get it. Mm-hmm. And so I find it a little bit less competitive in the way that modeling used to be, or on camera, or do mm-hmm. I have wrinkles? Like, mm-hmm. I don't care about any of that. It's just, I'm going to do a great job and have a good time. And if my voice isn't selected, it's not anything bad against me or my skill. Just
yeah, that's
voice.
Another thing when you're at an audition. Mm-hmm. You try to glean what purple means. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And if you have a little bit of time, you can say, oh, do you mean a little smoother? Because purple doesn't mean anything. And so if you can ask that question, they might say, no, actually, I meant make it more powerful.
Right.
Like a king, purple.
Right.
Then you'll know a little more about what they're saying. But basically, you're providing a service. This is mm-hmm. I always try to think of it as it's almost like waiting tables. It isn't, but because I've done that too. But you want to please whoever you're auditioning for. You want to please your director once you've got the gig, and your ego really has to go to the background.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's really what's different about on camera or just even acting on stage or something.
It's teamwork.
Well, yeah,
you know,
it's very
teamwork.
Much so.
It's not about
very
you. And even and many of us, I know Marty, I don't know about you if you have a home studio or if you're mostly going in person, but we deal with many of our clients online. There's the mm-hmm. live in-person studio, you do the editing, thank you, I'm leaving jobs. Mm-hmm. And then increasingly there are certainly, we supplement that work with stuff we do at home, or many of us base our entire careers on our home studio. So therefore our clients are at the other end of an email, and they could mm-hmm. be in Israel, they could be in South Korea, they could, mm-hmm. you know, sometimes mm-hmm. there's a recording studio in the middle, and sometimes not.
Right.
Because I've done things for English as a Second Language where you have to speak with lots of expression, but the tempo
and
has to be
slowly.
Very slow.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And so it
yeah,
it doesn't sound natural, but it's natural for that four-year-old who's trying to learn English.
Absolutely.
But, you know, when the client's on the other end, I always try to say, I'm only part of this team. The writer is part of this team. My voiceover interpretation is part of this team. The listener is part of mm-hmm. the team.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's never about just us. It's about the service, mm-hmm. as you say, mm-hmm. what we can bring to the table.
Yeah, this is the easiest hosting job I've ever done. They all just talk to each
we just
other.
Keep talking.
I don't really even really have to ask.
We spend all day in closets.
That's right.
Just while we're on this, Casey, just out of curiosity, is it similar? I mean, if you're auditioning to be a stick of gum or a chipmunk or a talking yellow triangle or something like that, I mean, do you know a lot of the other people? I mean,
yes.
The same, yeah, you do. It's a
yes.
community of people who
uh-huh.
know each other, right?
Very much.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I see a lot of friends at auditions, and if I go to, you know, in for the audition. Yes.
Yeah.
And we're, you know, when we support each other, like you said, mm-hmm. we kind of don't, it's not as
Marty
ruthless
used the, yeah,
as
Marty
you
used
might
the word
think.
Sanity, that you
yes.
can kind of do a reality check. Can you believe they're asking us
yes,
to?
Yes, and basically I love my voiceover friends. Mm-hmm, I really do. And when I see them, they get hugs from me and I get hugs from them. And, you know, we want each other to be successful. So we hear they got a gig, we're happy. Yeah, even if it's something we audition for, I'd rather have one of my friends get it than somebody I don't know.
True. Oh, yeah.
As long as they're good. You know, as long as they're good, I'm fine. It hurts, like Marty was saying. A lot of times you go to an audition, they go, oh, can you make it more conversational? And then you try. And by the time you're...
And then when you hear it on TV, it's all yucked up, right?
And it sounds like an announcer.
It sounds like this. Reading it.
That kills me.
Picturing Marty watching the TV going, that's not even purple. It's not even doing it purple.
Well, I'll tell you the one in particular that gets me. And, you know, God bless the guy that booked it because he's making $1 jillion right now. But probably about 3 years ago, they had auditions for Golden Corral. And at the audition, they wanted you to be kind of like John Corbett-esque, right?
Yes, okay.
So what would that be?
Well, he's just kind of a happy guy, you know. Every man, smiley, you know. He was doing those Walgreens, you know, on the corner of Main Street. He's kind of that guy.
Yeah.
Right? But the Golden Corral guy sounds like a horse. He's like, tonight at Golden Corral, you can get all-you-can-eat chicken wings for $8.99. And I swear to God, if I had a gun, I'd be...
I know.
Honey, we've spent about $10,000 on flat-screen TVs over the past month. Maybe you could kind of calm down, you know?
He keeps shooting at the screens is what he's saying. Okay, so we're going to take a quick break here. Well, a couple of things, though, before we do. They're going so fast, I'm kind of losing the thread of my questions here. But they're great. You guys are very interesting. It's interesting to see how social you guys are. I mean, you're all...
Because we're all starved for, like, human interaction. we work by ourselves all the time.
Usually we have guests in here. It takes them about 20 minutes to warm up to each other. That's
person.
Not happening here.
Dang.
We also like talking.
Yeah, that's true.
Right?
Yeah.
I know one thing that I wanted to say. This is just sort of to help out the people at home, and I wouldn't know this if I hadn't seen the movie. But Marty just used kind of a term that voiceover artists use that I haven't heard used in too many other ways. He said, whoever the guy is who booked that job, more power to him or something. Book means to get in the world of voiceover. Ordinarily you'd think, that if I was employing somebody, I booked Marty for that work. It's the other way around with the way you guys talk, right? You book that job, that means you got it, right?
Yeah.
Or you were booked. It's an intransitive or transitive verb.
All right. That was very public radio.
Thank you.
So probably
used incorrectly, but.
That's okay.
So in a world, one of the people who sort of mentioned, he's now passed on, but he's just this kind of legendary voiceover guy, Don LaFontaine. Even if you don't know too much about voiceover work, you might know that name. If you don't know that name, you would recognize that voice. So as we head into break here, we're going to offer you a little a compilation stole from the YouTubes of Don LaFontaine.
In a world in the year 2017.
In a time. Of tradition.
In a city where anything can happen. In a war that isn't his. Every day in New York City. On the Miami Police Force. In the deep south. From the sewers of Gotham. From the rooftops of Gotham. Above Gotham. Within this skyscraper high above the city. In a town driven by competition.
I love animation because in the world of animation, you could be anything you want to be. If you're a fat woman, you can play a skinny princess. If you're a short, wimpy guy, you can play a tall gladiator. If you're a white man, you can play an Arabian prince. And if you're a black man, you can play a donkey or a zebra. Now, I can't play white, my God. Now, I hate when people go on TV and tell you how hard it is to do animation. It's like, oh, Jay, it's such hard work. It's so hard doing animation, getting into character. No. UPS is hard work, okay? Stripping wood is hard work. I've done some animation, and here's how easy it is. It's the easiest job in the world. I go in a booth, and I go, what's the line? And the guy goes, it's time to go to the store. And then I go, it's time to go to the store. And you like that? Oh, we can move on. Okay. And then I go, well, what's the next line? He goes, it's getting dark outside. It's getting dark outside. And then they give me $1 million.
That is why they come running to us to say, can I get into voiceovers too? That's the myth. Yeah.
So, Casey Rogers, that's your life.
That is my life.
As described by Chris Rock. I assume it's actually not really that easy. And I mean, you know,
it isn't, but he's right that in the job that I do, I don't get the scripts until I'm ready to go.
Mm-hmm.
I only do my own lines. I don't have other people in the room with me. It's mm-hmm. like a factory kind of assembly line type thing.
And if you're doing a Pokemon cartoon, you've done a lot of Pokemon cartoons, right?
Yeah.
Are they making you do the line 20 times?
No.
Are they? No.
No, because I've just been doing this for so long now. When I got into Pokemon, actually, I'd already been doing voiceovers for a while and had done a lot of non-broadcast stuff and all sorts of things. But when I got into Pokemon, the engineers didn't really know Pro Tools. They didn't know digital recording either. It was all new. And we learned together. So at first, yeah, we did a lot of takes. But now I kind of channel my characters, especially if I've had the character for a while. I can do it in one take. I can do it in two takes. And I found that with other shows I've been in, when I'm used to the character, it's much easier.
So like, what would it – by the way, if anybody has questions about this or all the other voiceover stuff that we'll be talking about, the whole profession and the art of voiceover work, we've got all kinds of professionals in here today. Our number, 860-275-7266, 860-275-7266. Probably said that too fast. I'll say it slower. 860-275-7266.
That'd be
7266.
Purple. Yeah, that'd be purple. And you can tweet us at WNPR Colin. And now, so give us a sense, like, what's a – I don't really watch a lot of Pokemon cartoons, although
okay.
my son did at one point. So what's a character? What's a character that – I mean, give
well,
us –
Well, right now I'm Axew in the show.
Yeah, which is
– Axew sounds like this, except that he only said Axew.
But maybe I might be an old lady – and then I would be speaking like this, and I'd actually have lines. Axew does a lot of – and all the Pokemon that I've done, like that's Totodile, and all these other ones, all they do is say their names. But they say you can say Toto, you can say Dial, or you can say Totodile, or you can say Dial. But it's all – it's like a drama class improv thing where you're just doing emotions with nonsense words. It's the same thing. But when it comes to the characters, they do have auditions for all of the big characters, and everybody comes in and we get picked to do it. So even when you've been in the show for 17 years, it's still audition time if they have a new character. But that's basically... the voices, for me, I've done it for so long that picking a voice for a character is pretty easy, you know. But I do think that in animation there's a different feeling than there is in regular voiceovers and commercials.
Well, you know, I often – as I actually teach a course in this at a community college down in Norwalk, and – many come in going, oh, I want to start with cartoons.
Yeah.
I say, you can't start with cartoons. Let's start with basic acting.
Mm-hmm.
And I try to
right.
teach in 6 weeks. I say, you know, cartoon and animation is simply acting with characteristics
exactly.
added. That's what I tell them. So
exactly.
you have to learn how to sound, you know, mad versus happy and, you know, slow versus fast and have all those things under your belt, because when you do a character, it's one thing. Like, I can say Boris and Natasha just like anybody else, but that doesn't mean that I can do a consistent
exactly.
Russian accent for an hour
time.
For an
and
entire
I, and
time.
I do think that it's also... I do think that it's a misconception that the voice is what's important.
The acting is what.
The acting is really what makes the voice move. If you were listening to Eddie Murphy there, he was going. Chris Rock. When he got to the part where he was on, as he's pretending to be the engineer, you know. He sounds so different than he does when he's on.
When he actually does it.
And all his characters are basically Chris Rockerized.
Yes.
I mean, they are him. So
absolutely.
There's that element of animation where really it's just voice acting. It's
yes.
not, you're not adding, you're not changing your pitch.
No.
And you're not changing
not doing anything.
Changing your placement. It's acting, and you need control over all of that. For some people, I tell people it's like right brain and left brain. So your right brain, you just sort of jump in and play.
Uh-huh.
And like, hey, I can do
yep.
that. You know, just there's the freedom in there. But it needs to be supported by technique.
Exactly.
So that if they
you have
say,
to move all around, but you can't move your head.
Right, exactly.
Things like that.
Yeah.
But I wanted to add to that again, it's like part of the skill. If you decide you do want to do animation or cartoon voices or whatever, for me at least, I have a whole bunch of them that I've already developed, and they're memorizing catalog
characters,
but they're actual characters. Yeah. They're not just voices.
No, they're characters.
Exactly.
And that's
names.
The difference.
Yeah.
And you can go back to those characters and tweak them to become other characters. And many times when I audition for something, I use my own voice. Even though I can do a whole bunch of different technical changes to my voice, I use my own voice. It depends. If it's someone who's young, I know my voice sounds pretty young. Mm-hmm. And I can just change it a tiny bit and make it
what there's little things you can change.
It's the icing on the cake. Mm-hmm. You know, changing the placement or tone. Yes, I'm sorry.
Hello, Colin. Are you here?
That's right. Not only that, but people are calling in and wanting to talk to you.
That's great.
So let's go to Susan in Manchester. Hi, Susan.
Hi.
What's on your mind?
I'm wondering whether there are styles or fads in voiceovers, and if so, what's current or coming?
All right. Randy's ready for that one. Yeah.
Well, you know, there are some styles or fads. Certainly, if you look at the big money national commercials, styles can come and go. Right now, what's very, very popular is sort of this understated, like kids, they feel good. Like, you feel like nobody really did anything. And it's a lot of times those big money jobs will go to those who are skilled at film and TV acting because they know how to be subtle. Mm. And they can tell a story without too much pitch and without relying on being too big. I always tell people that there's no second balcony in voiceover. Mm-hmm. Animation is a little more theatrical, but it's just kind of like, you know, I bought this car.
Yeah, like the words are just tumbling out of your mouth. They're not. You're not forcing anything.
Yeah, so that's very popular. Yeah. And I would say even in the what I call the bread and butter work that we do, tutorials, telephony, museum tours, apps, IVR, explainer videos, all of that, there's still a difference in tone where some people, old-fashioned, may want the more, thank you for calling IBM. They may still want that, but if it's Google, they may be like, hey, you know.
That's right.
Thanks for calling Google.
Yeah, the tech stuff is a little bit hipper.
Yeah.
But there also is, I think, whenever there's like a fad, like you remember like there was like the sort of like damaged voice guy fad and all that.
Well, you know what was the damaged voice guy fad?
It was just like you had to have your voice a little bit rough kind of, you know, and so, you know, you had all these voiceover guys that, like, smoked 3 packs of cigarettes a day that were going out for auditions.
Or for the women, it's that raspy kind of.
Yeah, the Kathleen Turner kind of voice, right?
Yeah. But before she got extreme, yes.
Yes. But there's a time and a place for everything, right? For all different styles and different voices. And so even though there's a fad, there's still a lot of other stuff.
Absolutely. You know? And I say there's more market. People come in sometimes and say, well, but I don't sound like Don LaFontaine. And I have a friend whose his name is Doug Turkel. And he's an online friend. He works out of Florida, I think.
Yeah,
and he calls himself the announcer. And he can do this kind of stuff. But mostly he sounds like the whiny guy next door. And that's what he gets booked to do over and over and over
again. Yeah, he's an interesting guy. And I met him in at the beginning of May. But he used to do those Mitsubishi commercials. I think that was him doing those, like, it's Mitsubishi calling, like that guy.
That could be.
So, yeah.
And he's really good. So sounding, you know, to go back to the Susan, the caller, is being able to sound believable within the situation never goes out of style. Mm-hmm. What people think of as believable, I say, is getting a little more on the conversational side so that we're really selling, especially in commercials, our uniqueness and our personality along with our voice. But then there's always things that call for straight announcer as well.
Mm-hmm. And they care about whether or not you're selling the product, too. Mm-hmm. So they're going to care about if you can tap into the dream that the product's selling, then you might book it just because of that.
Yeah.
It might be you put a little sigh in somewhere or you put, you know, you don't know exactly.
You don't know. Sometimes you got to let it happen.
Yeah, you just got to let it happen. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right, let me grab one more call here. It's Wendy in Colchester. Hi, Wendy.
Hi, how are you?
Just fine.
I was calling to find out about the different schools that are available for people to take for voiceover. I, for many years now, have done phone work, and when I call clients, many times they have said to me, you have a really great voice. You should do something with it. So I thought, well, that would be great fun. I thought of a long time ago going into drama, and because of certain life circumstances, I never pursued that. But could you tell me if there are any Connecticut schools you'd recommend for voiceover training?
All right.
Well, If you're in Connecticut and you're able to get to New York City, Edge Studio has a lot of programs.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and they also have a studio in Connecticut, and they do in classes. And they'll do teleclasses and webinars. Whatever school you go to, and of course I'm partial to Edge Studio because I am one of their coaches, they are honest. Wherever you go, don't let anybody sell you any kind of a bill of goods of, oh, don't worry, you'll make your money back 2 months after you make your demo. Mm-hmm. You know, make sure you go to a place that is very honest about, look, this business requires you to be a businessman, business person, and it takes hard work. And a very nice voice is the beginning of what you need, but there's a learning curve about how much more you need to know. Mm-hmm. So just make sure they're honest and there are no false promises. That's what I would say. I think Edge has a very thorough program, and it's very honest. And if it takes you 6 months to 2 years to get ready for your demo, take that time. Don't make a demo, which, if you don't know what that is, that's a small sampler of what you can do,
Casey Rogers, was it different learning? Was there a different learning process, education process to do the work that you do in animation?
Well, I took classes. I started by going to the Learning Annex because it said make money in voiceovers. And I thought, well, as soon as people had always told me I had a great voice. My father was in advertising. I knew what voiceovers were. I thought, hey, I'll go to this seminar, and then I'll make a demo, and then I'll get rich. But started me on the road to taking classes, to going to different voiceover people, to having vocal coaches, to working very hard, getting my imitations down, learning my technique, and then eventually I made a demo. So that was really how it worked out.
Get good before you get noticed.
Get good, exactly.
Because what happens is if you make a demo right off the bat, and if you do go to a school somewhere and they're like, yeah, we're gonna do a 4-hour
boot
class.
Camp. Yeah, it's a boot camp, and then you leave here with a demo, you'll be all set.
And then after the demo, you'll be all set. So what will happen is you'll have this demo, you'll send it out to all these people, they'll listen to it, and they won't like it. And then you'll kind of, down the road, you'll get better.
Oh, and that's the guy that sent me that demo.
Yeah, that guy stinks. I'm not going to listen to that.
Oh,
so,
yeah. Uh-huh.
So it is, that is a very important aspect of it. You know, do the training. Like you said, you learn from a bunch of different people. And
I think you could even get into you said you were interested in drama. Acting is very important to this. You could get into a community theater. And I do community theater. I do it to keep up my acting skills.
And it's fun.
And it is fun. Mm-hmm.
I want to ask a couple of quick questions here, then we got to take a break.
I hope that helped.
I'm sure that was helpful to her. Very quickly, one of the things they show in the movie, and it's certainly something that I've had to do under other circumstances myself, is just stuff you do to take care of your voice. And they show it kind of comically in the movie. There are these kind of Rocky-style montages of people going, and sticking their tongue in different, do you exercises, Marty?
I actually don't do vocal exercises. What I do is if I'm in the car on my way to a session, I sing.
Yeah. Me too.
I generally, the thing that works for me, because there are so many voices available to sing from, is Beach Boys records, because there are so many harmonies, so I can start off in the bass and move up, and then by the time I get where I'm going, I'm all warmed up and everything. So that works. Mm-hmm. But you do have to take care of your voice in that, shouldn't be yelling, should definitely not smoke.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to a session, you don't eat or drink any dairy, stay away from spicy food because it kind of gums things up a little bit.
Yeah.
But
we break those rules on occasion. Yes, I agree. Those are the rules. I mean, I find sometimes, especially after a long session, I can't even say the word organization. Like my mouth and my tongue gets tired. So I will sometimes do stretches on my mouth, or I'm a singer, so I'll do my singing vocalizing in the car, and it is a lot of to get the lips going. But that's just to warm up my voice. And I will sometimes warm up my improv skills by taking a billboard on the way to the studio and reading the copy on the billboard in five different voices or in five different emotions.
Sure.
Just to get out of the box of, I'm going to read it my one way, and that's the only way I know how to read. So if you get
so
a little
you're ready
bit crazy.
By the time you get there.
But you do have to say, definitely don't smoke. The rule I break is the coffee rule. I'm a caffeine girl in the morning, so you're not supposed to, but I do drink tons and tons of water. I think we'll all agree that that helps.
And even when you're in sessions, and you can use Ricolas I like those. You guys don't?
No, I don't like the sugar. The sugar makes
me
dry.
Oh, no, I don't. I use
the dreaded
mouth
click. Oh, okay.
Sugar-free.
Every time I take Ricola, I go, Ricola! So that doesn't always work for every
or
session.
Or you want to blow one of those long horns.
That's right.
You know, I was worried about the spit valves and those long horns that they blow. All right. So there's one more thing I want to just do really quickly. I don't want to run out of time because we do have Luz Ramos at the end to talk also about sort of overdubs in different languages too, which is like a whole other weird area here. But very quickly, I think to the average observer, and I noticed this about 15 years ago, it seems as though a lot of the voiceover work that we encounter, watching commercials, you go to a planetarium show, you get out of a cab in New York, you know, and some famous person's voice tells you not to leave any valuables and get a receipt and stuff like that. You go to a planetarium show, it's Tom Hanks. You know, you watch a commercial, it's Morgan Freeman, it's John Hamm, it's John Slattery. Is the influx of these really famous people grabbing a lot of this work, is this a problem, or are you guys working, you know, enough kind of in other areas that you barely even notice it?
I think we're working enough in other areas. I mean, sometimes you have that thought that, you know, oh, man, that guy's got millions and millions. Why is he taking away voiceover work from somebody? But, you know, you can't blame them. And there used to be a time that actors like that never did voiceover work, you know, because it was kind of considered.
They wouldn't even do TV.
Right. But so they do it. One thing, though, that does get me, I get sent either auditions that come online or get sent to auditions, and they want it to sound like, we want it like Morgan Freeman. I'm like, well, why
Morgan.
Why am I
He's
here?
Too expensive.
Because, yeah, but yeah, that's totally me. I mean, so, but that's part of the fads that come in. Mm-hmm. You know, Dennis Leary was a big fad for a while.
And, and Randy, I sense it's a little bit less anyway with women voiceovers anyway, or am I
wrong? Well, there aren't the majority of the voiceover, quote, superstars seem to be male. But you realize that that's the very, very visible tip of the iceberg.
Right.
When celebrities get that work, not all celebrities can do it. They just have to be excellent storytellers.
Absolutely.
And so like George Clooney and Morgan Freeman, you know, they're all amazing. And females, we get a lot, can you sound like Sigourney Weaver on Planet Earth? That's our go-to. Or Kathleen Turner. Mm-hmm. Or so they will give us those celebrity
Perry
references.
Perry Gilpin was big for women for
yes,
a while.
Yes, and you know, if you know who she was, she was on Frasier and played Roz. Was that her character
name?
So that dry kind of read, or they will, now we get Kristen Wiig. So there are, we get celebrity references. But the fact of the matter is, if they want a celebrity to do it, especially a visible celebrity, like some audiobooks are narrated by Meryl Streep doing The Velveteen Rabbit, well, they want Meryl Streep.
Right.
You know, and she's awesome, so that's great. But there's so much work. The amount of work. They are crying for good audiobook narrators. And and that is grueling work. And audiobook is grueling work.
That's really grueling work.
You know,
work.
I love radio imaging because just say the same link three different times, you know.
Right. All right. I love car ads for that.
Yes.
It's just like you just
short-term and long-term work. Yeah. So, no, the celebs are not really a threat.
All right. We're going to grab a quick break. We're going to come back with Luz Ramos and talk a little bit about the world of overdubs in other languages.
Special case. You hear me, but you never see my face. I do voiceovers. I make all my dough doing voiceovers. Girls from the valley, like he is a totally rad dude.
Remaining battery life, 17%.
This is boring.
Remaining battery life, 16%. Today's show was produced by Patrick Scahill, Betsy Kaplan, and me, with help from our intern Garrett Connolly. The part of Bill Curry was played by Morgan Freeman. On tomorrow's show, the nose mourns the death of Gus, the neurotic polar bear. And now, back to Colin. Remaining battery life, 15%. Kill me now.
All right, so we're talking about voiceovers. There's so much to cover here, and there's like a whole bunch of stuff that we're just not even going to have time to get into. Like the whole world of audiobooks itself is fascinating to us. But one avenue we haven't gone down yet is the whole issue, and you see it a little bit in the movie In a World, where in fact the actress Eva Longoria is being coached on how to, I think, redub a movie in a Cockney accent. That's not exactly what Luz Ramos does. But first of all, welcome to the show. Second of all, am I saying your name correctly? And third of all, tell us a little bit about what you do.
Oh, hi. How are you guys?
We're fine.
Hi. Hi, Luz.
Hi. Well, what I do is I actually take either a piece that has been already produced and dub it over in Spanish, or just, you know, from scratch, just do Spanish commercials and anything else, any Spanish narration, anything that can be done, you know, with a voiceover artist, I'm involved with. And also, sometimes I even get involved with the script writing, because that becomes a challenge, too.
Well, no, I just, it seems to me that, and this is something that everybody who's ever watched anything has wondered about, is and when it's sort of redubbed into a different language. I mean, a lot of times it matches up amazingly well with the mouth movements you're seeing on the screen, but that must be a special art. I mean, things in one language don't have the same syllable count as they do in another language.
Absolutely. Everyone that knows Spanish knows that there are way too many words to describe things compared to English. So it's usually a lot longer, and that, you are 100% right. I mean, all voiceover artists, the people that you have with you today, are all, you know, phenomenal artists, and it takes a specific skill to do this type of work. But when it comes to doing it in another language, everything gets timed, and then you have to find just the right either phrases or words, because, you know, there are many countries that speak Spanish, and everyone has a different sort of, you know, inflection, and there aren't any dialects per se, but there are colloquial expressions, and then to match that to someone else's mouth movement and within the time, it's hard work and it requires a lot of skill.
So are you standing there with headphones on, facing a screen where you see this other actress saying these things?
Yes.
Yeah.
That's exactly right. Most times you're sitting watching, you know, the B-roll, and just you know, trying to match it, and then it's going over and over it until it's as close as possible, so it doesn't detract from the performance and the project and, you know, and the message, et cetera, et cetera.
You know, while we're talking to you, Luz Ramos, we also have in studio Casey, who I assume everything that you do in a Pokemon thing was originally
in
Japanese.
Yeah. It was, yeah. Now, we have scriptwriters who rewrite so that it matches what we call lip flap, which is the open and shut mouth of the cartoon character. And I'm wondering, Luz, because most Spanish words end in vowels as opposed to consonants like English, do you have to sort of swallow the vowel a little
sometimes.
Bit?
Yes, sometimes I do.
Yeah, because I know that, I mean, when Pokemon first started, sometimes we would, or in other shows I've been in where we've dubbed, we've made changes in the studio to the script if it didn't fit. But the script writer we have now is very skilled at matching flap, and most of the time it automatically fits. But, yeah, I do the same thing that you do. It's dubbing.
And Luz, we got about 30 seconds left, but it sounds like sometimes you maybe even have to make a different word choice, sort of think, well, is there another way I could say this that's closer?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Because, you know, you want it to match, but you don't want to change it. You can't change the message. You can't. So you have to find the right words, and sometimes it's kind of just switching everything around so that it ends the right way and starts the right way to match.
This is fascinating stuff, and I apologize to everybody that we are out of time, including our callers. I think Marianne O'Hare was online. She's also a voiceover artist, has worked with a number of the people here on our show.
Yep,
I wanted
right.
to get to her. I ran out of time. Also, Jim in Hartford, sorry, I can't take your call. But Randy Kay, great to talk to you. Marty Moran, Casey Rogers, Luz Ramos. What an interesting show. We could very easily do another hour about this. I think we could probably do an hour just on the voicing of books. But anyway, maybe that's another show.
Thank
we'll
you.
Be back tomorrow with the nose. Thanks to all of you, and thanks to Kyone Wolf, who made this project a project of her heart. She's the one who produced this show.
Waterfalls, oh no. I thought it was extinct. I know. We all must have blinked. I recognize the sound of sorrow.
Yeah. I'm Kyone Wolf, and after all these years of doing voiceover for Colin, and especially these last words, which have about a 10-second limit, I've become really good at nailing my timing.